This edition of Politics and Science was recorded on July 28, 2009, and features nuclear physicist Dr. Ernest Sternglass. If you have any questions for Politics and Science, you can direct them by email to politicsandscience@madriver.com. That's politicsandscience@madriver.com. Politics and Science can be heard weekly on WMRW LP Warren 95.1 FM, and in the Bella Falls area can be heard on Wool LP Bellows Falls at 101.1 FM.
And the following program presents the views of its participants and does not necessarily represent an official viewpoint of this organization or any other.
Well, Dr. Sternglass,
I have currently that you're a professor emeritus of
Yes.
radiological physics in the Department of Radiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine.
That's correct.
And the director, co-founder, and chief technical officer of the Radiation and Public Health Project.
Correct.
So I just thought to start and to introduce you to our audience, it might help
Right.
if they knew a little bit about your background. And I know
Right.
that I know that you emigrated as a teenager. And
Right, I escaped from Hitler with my family, fortunately. In 1938.
Uh-huh. So when you emigrated at the age of 14 and came to the U.S., you were already interested in science and physics?
Oh, absolutely. Early in life, in fact, my parents, who were both physicians, discussed the effects of, cancer caused by x-rays and by medical practices that were not fully understood in the early 1920s when I was born.
So this has been a lifelong family interest.
Absolutely.
Use of radiation. Your father used radiation in his work?
Yes, he was a dermatologist, and he discussed the fact that sometimes he had to treat skin cancers in people whose doctors had treated them with x-rays to get rid of acne. And my mother was a pediatrician and gynecologist who was aware of so many women who lost their babies after they had x-ray exposures and during pregnancy.
Hmm.
And so early in life, at age 5, 6, 10, I became aware of all these dangers.
Hmm.
At the same time, they took me to shoe stores where at the time they had installed x-ray machines so you could watch your toes through and see how well the shoe fitted. And that caused a lot of unnecessary x-ray exposure among children.
Mm. Yeah, that probably ended up, as we'll find out during the show, but it probably ended up causing some cancers.
Exactly.
Mm.
The kids then developed leukemia. They had problems in school. They had emotional, psychological problems, brain damage, and physical damage that sometimes wouldn't show up for 10, 20, 50, or 60 years.
Hmm. So, but at some point back then, I think those novelty, were those called fluoroscopes? The
fluoroscopes, right.
Yeah.
Fluoroscopes were actually invented by Thomas Edison and used by doctors for many decades. And in fact, my life's work later was to develop new technologies that would greatly reduce the exposure in fluoroscopy by factors of the order of 100 times or so.
Hmm.
And that is how I became involved professionally in radiation, because of my early upbringing.
So you thought radiation still had an application in as a medical use, and you thought...
It's very essential.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, physicians absolutely depend upon CT scans today and x-rays, all of which we try to minimize the radiation exposure by using semiconductor devices instead of ordinary film. And my department, my section in the Department of Radiology was devoted to developing new and better methods of imaging.
Mm.
That would cut the dose and reduce any side effects. That was my professional life.
I see. And you first worked at Westinghouse.
Right, for 15 years,
mm-hmm.
where I developed, where they started to develop a large image intensifier that would cut the dose by 100-fold, and things that, like looking at your muscles and looking at your chest and so on. And that was very satisfying. And during that time, I developed a new type of camera that was based on my research at Cornell University here in Ithaca, where I now live, in which I developed a new camera tube at Westinghouse that went to the moon and sent all the pictures back that we recently saw in the 40th anniversary of the moon landing.
Hmm. Well, congratulations.
So I was very much thrilled to see my tube, my work on imaging, show the world the wonderful little planet, blue planet, on which we live compared to the desolate moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gave me a lot of, satisfaction.
Now, some people say that's the most beneficial outcome of the lunar program, was that we actually got to see the Earth as it exists in space.
Right. And that makes me feel good that in that sense I helped to make the world aware that we can't afford to use nuclear weapons and destroy this beautiful planet and all life on Earth.
Now, your mother's concern about overdosing of X-rays seemed to have been picked up by somebody who caught your eye in the 60s, and that was Alice Stewart.
Exactly. She did the detailed studies statistically using a few thousand women who had been exposed to X-rays during pregnancy.
And who
before delivery, mostly.
Who was she?
And, huh?
Who was she? Alice Stewart.
Oh, Dr. Alice Stewart at Oxford University.
Mm-hmm.
She was a pioneer in undertaking statistical epidemiological studies of large populations exposed to X-rays. And she discovered that women who got just one or two or three diagnostic X-rays during the late part of pregnancy, just before birth, these women often had children who developed leukemia generally between ages 5 and 10. And that was not discovered until the late 50s and published in the early 60s. And that's when I became interested in this phenomenon, because in the early 60s I had two new children. And I was suddenly told that we have to build a fallout shelter to protect us in the new house we were building. And so I looked up, the literature and found that in congressional testimony, Dr. Alice Stewart warned about the much greater sensitivity of the newborn or the child in the mother's womb than the typical adult on whom we had done studies since the discovery of X-rays in 1895. So over these half a century, we were really ignorant of the enormous sensitivity of the embryo and the baby developing in the mother's womb.
Hmm. So, and how was her work received at the time?
At the time, most physicians didn't want to believe it, because they had used X-rays for so many years and didn't see any obvious effects. And it turned out that most of them, of course, were working with adults. But then studies by Dr. E.B. Lewis at Caltech in California showed that even the radiologists who were exposed to many years of scattered X-rays had a shorter life expectancy. And so all these things were only discovered pretty much after Dr. Alice Stewart's pioneering papers in the late 1950s and early 1960s, during the height of the Cold War.
And was it eventually accepted by the medical community that
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Today, when you go into a radiology department, there are signs posted everywhere saying, if you're pregnant, please tell your doctor or the attendant about this, because because of the danger of X-rays to the baby in your mother's womb.
Mm. And how did your interest in Alice Stewart's work segue into your interest in nuclear fallout from above-ground testing?
Well, that's interesting because I realized when I was trying to cut the dose in radiology, you know, by factors of 10 or 100 times, the government was detonating nuclear weapons beginning in 1945, the first bomb in New Mexico, the first trial of a nuclear bomb, and then in 1951, a big series of tests of hundreds of atmospherically detonated atomic bombs carried fallout across the United States. And I found out about this and examined and saw articles by other physicians and by other scientists like Dr. Ralph Lapp in Science that there were large emissions and large fallout coming down thousands of miles away from the bomb tests in Nevada and places like upstate New York, right here in this area of Albany and Syracuse. The doses to the children were enormous, but nobody had done any epidemiological studies, and that's how I became involved in learning that indeed there was a rise in leukemia in children and that this was taking place all over the world and that we have lost a million children or so prematurely because of our lack of understanding of the seriousness of fallout compared even to ordinary x-rays.
So
the reason that bomb fallout is so serious is that it produces fine, invisible particles of hundreds of, over 100 new radioactive elements that are just like the ordinary elements we need in our life, like calcium, strontium 90, for instance, has the same chemical properties. And so when we were drinking milk, we ingested a lot of radioactivity into the body, and there it concentrated in key organs like the bone, where the immune system cells are formed. And so we began to damage our ability to fight both infectious diseases and cancer cells when we damaged the ability of the bone marrow to produce healthy white cells. And that's how I became involved in trying to understand the full dimensions of what we had done by not fully understanding the difference between ordinary x-rays, a chest x-ray, or, for instance, drinking milk near the big cities where the dairies were located and where the nuclear reactors were built. And not only that, I began to understand that the government was so concerned during the Cold War that the Soviet Union would overrun the rest of Europe as they had begun to overrun, you know, Poland and East Germany and Hungary and so on, so that we felt it was absolutely necessary to keep testing nuclear weapons. And so the government could not admit that small amounts of radiation were dangerous, and in fact killing many millions of people. And that's the tragedy of our age, that the Cold War prevented us from really learning how dangerous nuclear fallout and therefore all nuclear weapons were, that it was suicidal. It was a weapon that was not usable because when you used it against the enemy, the fallout would come back and injure and kill and hurt your wife and your family and your newborn children especially. Now I became permanently, all through my life, convinced that this was the greatest danger that humankind had ever faced and that we must find a way to end both nuclear weapons and the reactors that produce the plutonium in which from which the nuclear bombs are built.
Now, you've connected nuclear power to the nuclear bomb. I don't think many people know that there's a link between them. Could you describe that link?
Yes, that's very difficult for most layperson to understand, that the only way that we can produce plutonium is to operate nuclear reactors. And in fact, the first nuclear reactors were built in the state of Washington way back in the early 1950s and 60s. Those reactors were designed to produce weapons material. There is no other way that you can produce this very efficient material, which is plutonium, only a few pounds of which are necessary to build a bomb like the Hiroshima bomb that killed 100,000 people and destroyed a whole city, which I visited, by the way, and it's just a terrible feeling to be there. I knew that I would have to try to educate people that every nuclear reactor, whether it is, no matter what it is built for, research or for creating plutonium or for producing energy, that they all are emitting these very deadly substances, which are in effect a form of poison gas, and really illegal weapons in that sense, because they, affect the whole population, not just soldiers in the field, and therefore there is really no way that we can continue to test weapons or to build new ones, because they are essentially suicidal.
Mm.
And therefore, and that's the interesting part, we can't use anti-ballistic missile systems to defend ourselves against an attack. And I wrote an article about this recently for the New York Times, where I pointed out that trying to seek security by building an anti-ballistic missile system is completely mad, because when you detonate the hundreds of bombs that are needed, you know, to meet the incoming hundreds of bombs, to destroy them in the atmosphere before they can reach the cities, the fallout from this enormous number of nuclear weapons needed would essentially produce an enormous death rate all over the world, and including our own country. So there is no way that we can use nuclear weapons for our defense or for attacking an enemy, because wherever we, detonate in other countries, it would be blown right back by the winds circulating the earth and poison our own children.
So the deterrence at this point is still mad, mutually assured destruction.
Absolutely, because even though, we might not hit any city, no city might be directly destroyed by fire or by blast or by the short burst of X-rays that have come out when the uranium splits, but we would be poisoned by the invisible new elements that didn't exist on Earth before, that, similar to all the elements we need to live, get into our milk and our drinking water, into our food, and poison us without our ability to see it and smell it and taste it.
Mm. So you're saying that the nuclear power plants are actually part of the military weapons program, and
they were created because of that, and the government was anxious for people not to worry about the bomb test fallout by announcing that there's so little fallout coming out from the bombs and very little released. They didn't talk at all about releases from nuclear reactors, which are inevitable, because if you don't release some of these radioactive gases that are created when in the fuel of the reactors, the people in the plant would die. So you have to get rid of them.
Hmm.
They can't be inhaled by the workers in the plant. And we now know, studies have shown, that there's a much greater cancer rate among workers working in a nuclear plant than working in ordinary coal plants or natural gas plants. So it is simply an inherently impossible technology. It was a mistake that we didn't fully understand until tens and tens of years of looking at the statistics that we have in this country, detailed statistics on cancer rates, on heart disease, on all kinds of terrible diseases that have only recently appeared.
In fact,
that's another thing that the famous scientist Sakharov in the Soviet Union discovered, that he wrote an article pointing out that there would be mutations in existing bacteria and other viruses and microorganisms like that, that they would produce new diseases for which we were unable to defend ourselves. And one of these is the AIDS epidemic, which started in Africa when the certain type of monkey cells were mutated, and people ate the monkey flesh in Africa, and they developed the diseases, and then so many people were injured without knowing it by the Sahara bomb test by the French that drifted down into the Congo and came down with the rain, and as a result, many, many people lost their ability to fight this new bugs that created the AIDS epidemic that we're now facing all over the world.
So it sounds like you're saying radiation has just lowered the functioning of our immune systems to such a point that we're susceptible to many more...
Absolutely. That's described in detail both in my own book, The Secret Fallout, which is now available on our website, radiation.org, for free, that you can anyone can download and see the story, how we unwittingly damaged the immune systems and mutated organisms that completely were new, how we damaged not only our immune systems, but the ability to fight cancer cells, and so that we had a large increase in the number of people who developed cancers during the 1960s and 70s, and especially in the 80s, when the reactors began to start to operate, and where all the dairies were located. Mm. And we just didn't understand any of this in the beginning because we had no experience with fission products before 1945.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember you said Thomas Edison worked to develop the fluoroscope, and I know that he stated that he thought nuclear technology was far too dangerous to be used because
yeah,
his...
Many people have now come around to this, and in fact, I just recently found in a new magazine, a magazine that I bought, an article by Dr. Conrad Miller on energy generation in the Obama years. It's in the Tikkun magazine of July and August, and he has written a book from which part of a chapter is reproduced here in this magazine, that completely points out the enormous danger of cancer from the plutonium and the inability to get rid of it easily because it has such a long half-life of hundreds of thousands of years, that it will be around for millions of years, and dangerous to our future generations.
Mm.
He talks about the ability of building windmills, and Germany is doing it already in a big way, and that a large fraction, significant fractions, like 10-20% of all the electricity in Germany and Denmark is now being generated by windmills and solar cells, and that's the way we have to go. We simply cannot afford to continue the operation of nuclear plants that are daily, not just during accidents, causing enormous health damage that adds to the enormous cost of health care rise in recent decades.
You did another study, or made a link that I think was novel, in that you were reading an article in the New York Times at one point, in I think in the 70s, was it, or the late 60s, where you noticed the SAT scores had fallen by an alarming amount.
Yes, that was actually, my son was taking the SAT scores. He was born around, he's now 50 years old, and so he was born in 89 and 59,
mm-hmm.
and he took his SAT tests about 18 years later, so that's in the 70s, late 70s, and then I saw an article about the unexplained sudden decline of SAT scores. So I said, oh my God, could it be that there was brain damage to the children that would not show up until one examined the test scores? And sure enough, I published an article, I think it was in 78, in a bulletin of the Society of Professional Teachers, in which I pointed out that every year that there was a large series of nuclear tests in Nevada, 18, 19 years later, there would be a decline in SAT scores in that part of the country where the fallout came down, and not in other parts. It was really amazing. And then we identified that radioactive iodine was one of the principal causes of the damage to the children, because the children drank the milk, mm-hmm. and the iodine went, all to the thyroid and created doses that were hundreds to thousands of times greater than they received from the external radiation,
mm-hmm.
on the ground. And all, and so when the government said, oh, there's no danger, because they only considered the radiation that was on the ground and giving off gamma rays, like X-rays, that reach the thyroid and other organs in the body. But they didn't talk about the fact that when it got into the milk, it would all concentrate in the tiny organ in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And this organ is known to control the development of the body and the brain in early life. And so later in life, it would show up in different forms of brain damage. And that is one of the terrible things that was anticipated by, that was not anticipated, I would say, because we just didn't understand the full nature of the way that different isotopes, different chemical elements created in the bomb fission of uranium, going to different organs of the body and doing different kinds of damage, including the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And when it damages the forebrain, the frontal part, the cortex, then it often affects the ability to make good decisions. That's where the human brain anticipates the future and tries to make decisions. And often, when the brain is damaged, as it has been found in some criminals, murders, people who murdered many people, they were found by studies that we can now do with imaging equipment, that their forebrain, the frontal part of the cortex, was damaged, and so they couldn't distinguish. They lost their ability to make socially good judgments and make mistakes, terrible mistakes, becoming, unable to control their temper and becoming involved in crime and murders and other forms of criminal activity. Years later in life,
mm-hmm.
which I now believe we didn't realize has led to and helped to produce this terrible economic crisis in which we are now living, because the young people born in the 50s are now now executives in large banks and lending organizations who made selfish decisions and essentially criminal decisions, knowing that the people who got mortgages and tried to, you know, buy a home didn't understand the nature of the kind of mortgages they were being given. And so when they couldn't pay, the banks made their profits, but the public lost their homes. So it's amazing to what degree we fully didn't understand either the effect on intelligence, IQ, and ability to think and reason that has now declined so much in this country, because we have compared, when we have international student tests, you know, students from Italy, England, France, and China, all over the world, participating in international tests for prizes, we are now coming out way down the list instead of having the top grades.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids have begun to drop out of high school in huge numbers, drop out of college much more so than in nations that have no reactors. So there has been an enormous effect on our society that we simply could not have and did not anticipate.
We're talking to Dr. Ernest Sternglass, who is a professor emeritus of radiological physics in the Department of Radiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, and he's also the director and co-founder and chief technical officer of the Radiation and Public Health Project, which can be found at radiation.org. Yeah, that's
right.
That's a very discouraging but very interesting study you did. And could you just detail a little bit of what the study found exactly, like which areas were spared from the fallout
Absolutely.
Effects?
And
go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, the areas that were spared from the bomb testing were the relatively dry areas of the Midwest, in the Dakotas and so on, plain. And the fallout often didn't come down until it got to the eastern, the Great Lakes, and the region where most of our large cities are located, Illinois and Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, and then New England. And especially where mountains are, there's heavy fallout came down. In those areas, we had the greatest effects on the SAT scores, and we had the least effect in areas were relatively dry. And because 90% of the new elements created in the fission of uranium, they come down with rain or snow.
Mm.
And so the snow mountains are a place where the fallout came down and got into the rivers and lakes that fed our, produced our drinking water supply. And the same fallout came down on the grass where the cows were grazing over large areas, and they took up these elements and it got into their milk and the calves. And so they and both the animals and human beings were affected by new diseases that we never knew before, and terrible diseases like Alzheimer's and the conditions of children, autism, all these things only rose in synchronism with the amount of fallout first generated by bombs and then the small, tiny amounts of radioactivity that were permitted and had to be released from every nuclear reactor. And so the regions of New England, Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island were most heavily affected because they have high rainfall,
mm-hmm.
combined with being in the direction from the southwest where the winds blew the fallout from Nevada and from all over the world, because the Russians and the Chinese and the French were also testing, so that we poisoned especially the areas of the northeast of the United States, where our major cities and universities are located, and we saw big effects on dropouts from college and all these things, workers unable to work because they were disabled, and all this has obviously not been understood when we were doing the bomb testing mm-hmm. during the height of the Cold War. And so the fortunate thing is that we now have a new president who was just a child during those years. He was in no way committed to bomb fallout for the Cold War as older people today who were active, you know, headed up our government during the Nixon and Reagan years when we were so concerned about Russia and the communists and China overrunning the rest of the world. And it all started because of Hitler. Mm. It started because our scientists were desperate, believing that Germany, where the fission was discovered, would also build bombs, and Hitler could possibly control the world with nuclear weapons. Fortunately, the Germans never fully succeeded in building nuclear weapons. We were lucky that we were not being bombed like Germany was, and they couldn't. Hitler was unable to get the scientists to produce enough of this special form of uranium, and that was needed, a rich form of uranium that was needed to make a nuclear reactor work, which then in turn produced plutonium. So it was impossible for Germany to do it, but people like Einstein, who used to be a pacifist, urged the President of the United States to build nuclear bombs because he was worried that Hitler could control the world mm-hmm. if he developed them first. And that's how we got into this terrible tragedy. Mm. It all goes back to the years of fascism and communism that we feared would destroy democracy all over the world.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a paradox there, in that it sounds like the technology that saved us from fascism is actually, if it's what you say is true, then it's causing a great deal of intelligence loss in our offspring.
Right.
And that in itself could bring about fascism when you have a democratic...
That's another reason, right. Absolutely. And in fact, I believe that some of our top leaders in the government, including President Bush, whose sister died unexpectedly of leukemia because he and his family lived in the path of the first New Mexico bomb test in 1945.
Oh.
And so it's possible and very likely that the attitude and the misunderstanding that we find now and the criminal activity in the government of the Bush administration that is now being discovered, that all this may have been partly induced and enhanced by the bomb testing.
By radiation.
Early in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the Franklin expedition, the Arctic expedition, to find the Northwest Passage, where they went off with canned goods, in cans that were not properly made. They were soldered with lead, and the entire expedition got lead poisoning and made a series of terrible decisions because they were mentally impaired and all perished.
Exactly. That happened. In fact, it probably contributed to the decline of the Roman Empire because the Romans built a wonderful system of aqueducts to bring fresh, clean water into their cities like Rome and Verona and God knows what.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, they used lead piping. And so they poisoned generations of their best people. And we have been doing the same thing with the so-called clean and too cheap to meter nuclear energy, which we believed was absolutely essential to fight the Cold War.
Now, it says here in this introduction to your book, Secret Fallout, that was written by George Wald, that he says that your studies were disregarded, discredited, or suppressed, even though the documents available under the Freedom of Information Act make clear that top-level government officials were aware of the accuracy of your findings. And what's your feeling about basically the regulatory agencies that are responsible for making sure that its population is safe?
Well, these are the problems. Number one, people in the government are mainly concerned about nuclear security, worried about other countries like China and now North Korea and Iran possibly getting nuclear weapons.
Mm.
What they don't realize is that there is no way that more nuclear weapons would be usable because they are so suicidal. Because the suicidal nature of these bomb tests were hidden by a government desperate and not being able to have huge armies like the Soviet Union at the time. And in fact, and oddly enough, and this is really strange, it was probably Chernobyl, the terrible accident that killed millions around the world, which people are told only 31 people died who were cleaning up the reactor, but millions were irradiated all over the world, including in this country, from the fallout that came out from this explosion. They couldn't understand that this was all suicidal, because there is no way you can fully appreciate the mental and physical damage, the mutations, the weakening of the immune system, none of which was understood. And we were lucky in a way, tragically, that Chernobyl helped to break up the Soviet Union, and therefore we no longer have a Cold War of the type we had in the 1960s, 70s, and early 80s.
Mm. If we could we talk a little bit more about nuclear power?
Yes.
There's a debate going on here in Vermont that Vermont Yankee, which is in southern Vermont, is coming up for relicensing. And I believe we're the only state in the country where the legislature actually has a say whether the plant continues to operate for the next, I think they're applying for another 20-year license. So it sounds like you're saying that nuclear power plants leak, or not actually leak, they actually have emissions that are done purposefully, and they leak.
That's right.
And they leak.
They are daily emissions, not just accidents that we're worried about.
And are you talking about?
In other words,
are you talking about particulate emissions, like actual release of particles that are radioactive?
Yes. What happens is that this is what happens: the fuel elements, which are often made of particular types of steel, contain pellets of uranium,
mm-hmm.
and this over time weakens the metal and often leads to corrosion, which then allows some of the radioactive gases to come out, like xenon and krypton, and these then have to be ventilated because the workers have to be able to breathe clean air in the building. So radioactive xenon and krypton and other materials are emitted, and then they turn into such terrible elements like cesium-137, which goes to the muscle and particularly to the breast and the reproductive organs of women, and strontium-90, which goes to the bone, and iodine that goes to the thyroid. And all these elements are similar to the ones we need for our normal function of our body and our immune system. So we are in a situation where the reactors were sources of damage that can't be stopped. There's no design of a new kind of reactor that would avoid these principles,
mm-hmm.
because metals are damaged, things corrode, and there is no way to prevent radioactive poison to get into our environment and poison both humans and animals and birds and other things, which have begun to die out in areas where there are a lot of reactor releases, and especially cancer rates of children, which have now been seen studied by the German government and showing that the greatest number of children developing leukemia and brain cancer live within a few miles, 10, 15 miles, of nuclear reactors in Germany. And then another study by the University of South Carolina has recently been published, in which, again, 17 different articles were examined, and they found that over many, many, many reactors all over the world, the same pattern of nearby child cancer rates completely supported the fears that we were damaging the most important things in our society, namely the health of the newborn.
Now the reactor officials that, you know, the quotes I've seen in the paper and from people supporting the continued operation of the plant, they always say that there is no leak of particulate matter. There's gamma radiation, which is waves.
No, that's not right. That's exactly where we made the mistake. We were only familiar with gamma radiation and X-rays at the time when the first reactors were built, and we had no idea of the full damage from the uranium fission products, which could not be stopped and had to escape into the environment. And that was our big mistake. The difference between external gamma rays or X-rays produced by outside sources that don't concentrate in a specific organ compared to what you inhale and ingest that gets into the lung and produces a huge increase in lung disease and lung cancer, gets into all the different organs producing where it goes to the thyroid, it affects the people's thyroid hormone production. And all these things we simply could not anticipate until we experienced and looked at the statistics 20, 30, 40 years after the releases occurred.
So you're saying that they're basically either not measuring it or they're not telling the truth when they say there's no particulate leaking.
They're doing both. They're both doing. On the one hand, we discovered, as described in The Enemy Within, which is written by Jay Gould and myself and two others of our organization, and this published called, where we found and showed graphs that make it absolutely clear that the government not only knew about this, but they falsified statistics and ordered, for instance, when they first always report weekly or monthly reports on births and deaths and so on, when the final reports were often written in volumes that are now in the libraries, the numbers differed so that the rise in childhood infant mortality and cancer rates near Three Mile Island would somehow vanish in the final books that are in the libraries and on the internet. So we are dealing with a situation where people were so concerned about national security, they felt that if we allowed our public to understand the danger, the biological danger fully, then we would not be willing to use the nuclear bombs to protect our society from communists overrunning the world. And that was the age of that I lived through, and that so many people of my age have now found to be so dangerous, so totally unexpected. Like this article by Dr. It's just unbelievable.
What is that?
I mean, this article by Dr. Conrad Miller, Energy Generation in the Obama Years, it is entitled. No, nuclear power is not safe and clean. This is the headline in this recent article. And then there's another article that has just appeared that was just released by the Environmental News Service by Dr. By Joe Mangano and Dr. Sam Epstein of the University of Illinois, who is a professor of the School of Public Health at the University of Chicago, and Dr. Rosalie Bertel, who is part of the International Institute of Concern for Public Health. And this article just appeared on cancer risk in aging nuclear reactors. And it's just, you know, 80 million people in 37 states live within 40 miles of a nuclear reactor. And these people are inhaling and ingesting things they can't see and smell and aren't aware of. they can't protect themselves easily. It's very difficult. If you're drinking water, you'd have to go and put a filter system into your kitchen, which we did. And we tried not to drink local milk. We tried to drink soy milk. These are things that people can do to help a little bit. But you can't, you know, filter the air that we're inhaling.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a big rise in lung cancer among women in this country. That's all in the statistics.
No.
And it wasn't due to smoking, because during the same period, smoking was gradually declining while the lung cancer rose in people who were drinking milk. And so it was a very difficult time for all of us, you know, and that is enormously misrepresented by a government that was forced first to build nuclear arms because of Hitler, and then to continue building them and threatening them because of Stalin, Mussolini, and the terrible problem of Japan attacking us at a time when we were, you know, not in any war, and Pearl Harbor was the time when we suddenly felt we had to build bombs and destroy Hiroshima, Nagasaki, which to this day, hopefully, will be the last cities that were ever will be suffering from the exposure and the blast and radiation from the nuclear bomb.
Dr. Sternglass, you said that earlier that 100 million children were lost from nuclear fallout. Is there
not 100 million? I'm sorry, a few million.
You said 1 million. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. 1 million, which is enormous and a terrible, almost unspeakable tragedy. And how many? Have there been any studies done to isolate how many casualties and diseases have been caused through nuclear power leaks?
Yes, I'm saying that the combination of nuclear reactors and nuclear bomb testing has led to something like 1 million excess deaths above the normal expectations based on the steady decline during the 1920s and 30s and early 40s. And then it's all shown in our books, The Enemy Within, or Deadly Deceit, by Dr. J.M. Gould, and of course my book, Secret Fallout. All these statistics are now being independently confirmed by Dr. Conrad Miller in his new book called The Most Important Issues Americans Think They Know Enough About, just published last year. These books and all this has been, you know, contains the evidence. It's overwhelming that we made a terrible mistake. And the only way we can restore the health of the nation and the future ability of people to work and function properly and to think normally and make the right decisions is if we simply phase out nuclear power, which all these people, including you know, Dr. Sam Epstein in the University of Chicago, all these people recommend that we must face the fact that we simply did not understand enough about this. And the whole technology of nuclear technology was a tragic mistake. The only thing that we can say that was in favor of it is that it probably prevented another world war, since we have developed the bomb and began to understand that it was suicidal. The attempts to, you know, to think about using them actually, fortunately, were never carried out. And I think in the Obama administration, there's hope that in the next 5, 10, maybe 20 years, we will be able to eliminate nuclear power and nuclear reactors by using wind and solar and clean energy from the interior of the earth, thermal energy in the interior, geothermal energy, to supply all our needs, as is now being increasingly done in European countries like Denmark and Germany and Sweden. And another thing that we were told, oh, look at the French, they have 70-80% of their energy, electricity, being produced by nuclear bombs, and they're perfectly okay. Well, they're not. There's an article on our website by Joe Mangano who shows and summarizes the fact that France has now had the greatest increase of cancer rates of any European country. And their cancer rates were very high in areas near nuclear facilities of every type. And so we have been deceiving ourselves because of our fear of communism. That's really what drove it. And only a new generation that is now a younger people in their 40s are now in our power in the White House. And so we have a hope that they can look at this and they know that we must find the same wind and solar and other resources, because there is plenty of wind and plenty of solar energy, sunshine, and the ability to use it that is now made possible by the new technologies. Mm. And it's much cheaper than building costly nuclear reactors that, if you even build them, sometimes you can't get them to operate for 5 or 10 years after you start construction.
Mm.
And so, in every way, we are facing a new world that has to be free from all forms of nuclear energy and nuclear power.
Well, Dr. Ernest Sternglass, we're out of time, and I want to thank you very much for coming on WMRW today. And I want to also...
Well, I appreciate your interest in this matter and your concern for the health of the people in Vermont and all over New England.
And thank you very much for your work during your lifetime. It's very important.
Well, thank you very much. I was lucky to be able to do it when my parents educated me about the danger in my early life.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
And that was Dr. Ernest Sternglass. Dr. Sternglass is Emeritus Professor of Radiological Physics in the Department of Radiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, and he's also the Director, Co-Founder, and Chief Technical Officer of the Radiation and Public Health Project, the RPHP. You can find out more about them at radiation.org. And he's written several books. One of them, Secret Fallout, is available at no charge on that website and is a fascinating read. You're listening to Politics and Science, and the previous show presented the viewpoints of its participants and does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of any other organization.
Any questions or comments about Politics and Science can be directed to the email address of politicsandscience@madriver.com. That's politicsandscience@madriver.com.
And we'll go out with a little Bob Merrigan. I should say, normally you can hear Politics and Science on Monday at 5 o'clock here in the Valley at 95.1, and now on Wool on Sundays from 3 to 4 at 100.1 down in Bellows Falls.